My name's Beth, I'm an addict. Hi. So, how long have I got exactly?
30 minutes.
30 minutes, okay. So, will you tell me when I've done 20 minutes?
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. When I've got 10 minutes left, then let me know. Okay, all right. So, I'm going to, I never know what I'm going to say when I do a share, so I'm just going to start talking and then eventually I'll land in the room with you guys. And I know that there's been a theme for today about being safe and protected, which is why I picked that reading yesterday, the step 10 promises, and you know, that thing about being safe and protected and being in a position of neutrality. And you know, I don't think I can speak without, because I don't regard myself as a highly spiritual person. At my home group where I go, we talk about being spiritually retarded, because we all pretty much are spiritually retarded at my home group. And, you know, I didn't come here to get into a spirituality competition with anyone. I didn't come here to be the winner of the 12 steps, the big cheese superstar CA sponsor. I didn't come here for all of that. I've seen a lot of it in the 20 years that I've been around, and it just doesn't impress me. It's fly-by-night stuff. All these people that talk about all the meetings they set up and all the millions of people they sponsor wave their big book in the air and talk about seeing the light come on in a man's eyes when he's taken through the steps. Just makes me want to puke. Yeah? I'm not down with that stuff at all. You can tell me about how many conventions you've been to and how you set up all the fellowships and all that sort of stuff. It's just, it's nauseating. You know, that's the sort of stuff that I did when I was selling drugs, taking drugs, sitting in crack houses and talking shit. I just used to make up crap about how fucking impressive and important I was. And it was bullshit then, and it would be bullshit now for me to sit here and tell you that I've got it all going on, you know? I've got 20 years clean and sober. I have my children back in my life. I have beautiful relationships, and I do have an amazing relationship with God. And that is contingent on me every single day making that relationship number one. And the first moment I don't put that relationship first, I start going mad and unravel very quickly. I am blessed. I am very, very fortunate that I need 24 hours. And in that 24 hours, I need to do stuff. I'm not one of these people that can cruise it. I'm not one of these people that can't be on it. My head is just barking. It races ahead, and I'm thinking about something someone said a week ago will pop into my head, and I'll be like, well, what the fuck did they mean by that? You know, it's just, that is, my head does a number on me very, very quickly. And I do think that's fortunate, you know, because, you know, 2 decades in recovery is quite a reasonable amount of time, and I've seen a lot of people come and go in that time, and I've really thought that people had it, and I've seen people build amazing lives for themselves externally, you know, people that had nothing, literally from the cradle, they had nothing, you know, really horrific stories of using, and they've got a home, and they've got a beautiful missus, and they've got a BMW, and they've got all this stuff, all this external stuff, and they're on fire, and then it's like, well, what happened to so-and-so? You know, and so easily, I forget what was really important when I came here, and that was that I was living in a crack house in St. Paul's in Bristol. My daughter was in Hackney. My husband was on the way to prison. I had taken over a woman's house that was a working woman that had managed to stop smoking crack and was on methadone. She had a 12-year-old deaf son living in the bedroom upstairs that he used to go to school Monday to Friday on a special needs bus. And she'd come over from Germany and she'd been using all the way through her pregnancy, and he had, you know, difficulties and stuff like that. And I used to go to her house to use and smoke crack. And one day I went round there and I had nowhere else to go. I was just a little parasite. You know, they talk about cuckooing now. I used to cuckoo people all the time. I was like 5 stone wet, and I used to cuckoo people's houses. I went to her house one day, sat on her sofa, gave her a bit of crack, and said, you let me stay here and I'll sort you out. Every day I'll sort you out some gear and everything. It will be sweet. I tell you what, it's so nasty. You know when you just take root in someone's home, yeah? And she didn't want me there. Her son used to walk down the stairs every day and he'd see me sat on the sofa on his way out the door and he'd look at me like, what the fuck are you doing in my house? It was hard work for me to cross the road to go to the phone box to ring my three-year-old daughter on her birthday. And when I rung her, I was like, happy birthday. And as soon as she said, oh, thanks, Mum, I said, what are you doing? She said, oh, Nan's got a made a party for me. I was like, all right, then, bye. Because I didn't want to get in touch with feelings. I didn't want to leave St. Paul's. And I had no intentions of going. And I used to smoke with people and they'd go, I'm going to rehab next week. And I'd think, yeah, good luck, mate, you'll be back. Everyone always comes back from rehab. And if people don't, you don't see people again, you just assume they're dead or they've moved to another town. Because that's what I would do. I had no hope for myself and I had no hope for you. If you came with your good luck stories and your jazz hands, I'd just tell you to fuck off. You know, I was, and that was nothing to do with my upbringing. That's what the biggest blessing for me of going through the steps and doing that first step four and my step five was learning that it was nothing to do with my upbringing. My dad was a junkie. My mum loved cocaine and drink. She drank herself to death. She died the year before last of her alcoholism and her cocaine addiction. I had all these glorious reasons why it wasn't my fault. That I was a crackhead and I couldn't look after my daughter and I injected heroin. It was definitely everyone else's fault. And then I went through the steps and this is how spiritually retarded I am. It was the first time in my life that I ever knew that I had a part. And at 28 years old, when I read out my step five to the woman that took me through the steps, it was the first time I told all of the truth and all of the facts in the same time and same place to one person. How sad is that? 28 years old, mother of a, mother and wife, and it's the first time I told the whole truth about anything. So I just used to make stuff up as I went along. You know, you get very good at reading people, don't you? I was brought up, I don't know how you guys were brought up, but I was brought up very devious. You know, I was brought up on ashrams and traveller sites and squats and all my parents took drugs and used drugs. And that's how I was a resourceful little fucker, my dad used to say. And, it definitely was the undoing of me because I could read people very well. I didn't go shoplifting or stealing because I would just convince you that you wanted to give me something. You know, that was my MO. And, you know, and then I would condemn people that weren't as good at being dishonest as me. You know, I was a nasty piece of work. And seriously, my point is, I was sat there in that woman's house and I didn't have any intention of leaving at all. That's how broken I was as an individual. I didn't think I was scared of anyone, but obviously that's not true. And my dad came out of prison after 7 years in prison. The first thing that he did was come to find me, which is, it always just, he's dead now, my stepdad. And it always just, I am so spiritually retarded that it's only looking back on things that I realise how much something bigger than me was working in my life. It's like even with the steps and the journey of the steps and my sobriety, sometimes I do think I did a lot of it. And then I look back and it's like, yeah, that was just really very fortunate. Or, you know, that was because you were doing a lot of service at that time. Were you sponsored? You know, it's so not about who I am, why I've managed to get long-term recovery. I really have just continued to follow very simple suggestions. And I do think I'd have just died. Someone would have kicked my head in eventually. And, you know, or I'd have ended up, I don't know, in a nut house. Because I had no intention of leaving. And I was really good at staying out of prison. And my dad came and got me after 7 years of being in jail. My mum had left him. She'd run off with the first drug dealer that come along as soon as he got banged up. And I found out after he died, or someone that died about a month after he told me, he found me on Facebook. He said, every day your dad was in jail, I knew he was broken because your mum had left him and his missus had left him too. And he looked after this kid the whole time he was in jail. And he said, the first thing I'm going to do is go and get my daughter. And that's really, really beautiful. But it really does signify how little people understand this illness. My stepdad could smoke freebase cocaine. It was like, I'm 50 next year, so I've come from a different generation of, like, crackhead. And he could freebase cocaine like a gentleman, yeah? Like it says in the book, you know? We just really wish we could drink like a gentleman. I used to really wish that I could just smoke a bit of crack at the weekend and treat myself. And just smoke a bit of crack like a lady, yeah? That's all I wanted to do. You know, I used to see some of the women that hung out with my dad and my uncles and stuff like that, and they were quite ladylike. You know, they'd have a few drinks, maybe smoke some freebase out of a nice teapot, yeah? Because, it, you know, that's quite novel. And I always used to think I could just treat myself, you know? I'd do really well, make a lot of money, sort myself out, get a nice gaff, get a nice car, and then I'd think, oh, I think I'll just treat myself. And the next minute, I'd have fuck all. And my dad used to baffle me. And obviously, he didn't understand what I suffered from. You know, if he'd stay up all night, smoke some freebase, they'd have cocaine left, and they would stop. Like, who fucking does that? And the first time my dad and my two uncles did that, I was about 17, and I cried. Because they all decided to stop. It's really fucking embarrassing. They didn't see me cry. I did go out of the room, but I was actually crying because I was so fucking frustrated that my dad had decided to drive home because the sun had come up and my mum would wake up and we had to get back for my mum. And I was just like, but why do we have to go back? Fuck her. And he was going to go back to work. He was going to be there when mum got up and go to work because given sufficient reason, that was it. He would just stop. He wouldn't cross the road to buy some crack. That thought would not occur to him. You know, if it was there and it was around, he would partake. And so he thought he could come to the crack house after 7 years of being in jail and just lift me out of the crack house. I'd go and do another little detox because I had the poxiest, like, heroin habit. I didn't really need to do much for detox because I was just smoking lots of crack. And he thought he'd drive me away with my little detox, take me up into the mountains somewhere, and I could do my little cluck, and then I'd come out, ta-da, good as new, all fixed again after detox number fucking 130. And, you know, and then he'd set me on my merry way, and I'd go back to being, you know, his daughter. And, of course, that's not what happened. You know, after 6 weeks of being somewhere in the middle of nowhere, like, he looked worse than he did after 7 years of being in prison. He did, because I just drained the fucking life out of him. As soon as I have not got drugs, I need this, I need that, I need a haircut, I need some new shoes, my clothes look shit, I'm, like, fucking eating. On the first part of my detox, I listened to two albums, right, for about 3 weeks. And in the end, my dad just took them away. He was like, you can't continue to listen to the same fucking songs on repeat. You know, it's just that adult addict brain, you know, it's just nasty. So he drove me to London and left me at my sister's house. And he didn't come and see me for about 3 months. I totally did his nut in. And he did not know what I suffered from. Take away drugs and I'm worse. You know, I'm worse than I am when I've got drugs. And I had no intention of ever coming to 12-step fellowship. When I was a kid, we used to go to festivals a lot. And the Jesus Army used to come on their bus and try and pray over people and stuff. And we used to just nick all the food out of their bus. They had a big bus with Jesus Army and a cross on the side. And they literally used to have stripy jumpers and guitars and do Jesus songs. And all us kids would just pile on the bus, steal all their biscuits and sweets and stuff like that because we wouldn't have seen anything sweet for weeks because we weren't allowed sugar because that's what hippies are like. They're cruel to their children. Sugar is evil, but it's all right for you all to smoke loads of pot. And then we would leave. And I just used to think, I used to look at these Christians, I used to think they're mental. They are absolutely mental. Like some of the stuff that they used to come out with. And I thought that they were all here. In 12-step meetings, I thought it was like God Squad. So I thought, I'm not going to go there ever. And the only other time that I found out about 12-step recovery, someone literally tried to 12-step me over a crack pipe. It's just not a good look. If you go out and use again, do not try and 12-step someone whilst you're smoking a crack pipe, yeah? It was this woman, and we used to hate each other, but I used to go to her place to get away from my husband so that I could smoke crack without him being there because he irritated me more than her. But after about 10 minutes, we just hated each other. And we were really similar, you know, one of them. And it would be like, we'd sit there and she'd go, have you moved my purse? Or something like that, do you know what I mean? And then we'd just have an argument and accuse each other of stealing each other's shit. And I'd had my daughter, and my daughter was asleep on the sofa. I'm such a wonderful mum. I'd always be a better mum than my mother was to me, of course. And she said, oh, now you've got a baby, you know, you should do something about all your using. I went to rehab once. She said, there's a book down there. But while she was telling me this, that I should go to rehab, yeah, she was like smoking her pipe. So she was going, I went to rehab once. It's really, really good. You know, it really helped me. You know, like when they hold their breath for an indefinite amount of fucking time. And it's just, I was just thinking, just spit it out, Joe. Just fucking, yeah, don't ever, ever 12, don't talk about the 12 steps when you're in the crack house. Because I just thought, yeah, right. Yeah, she had a big book on the floor somewhere in the corner. So, you know, I was never meant to come to these places. I wasn't seeking any sort of spirituality. I thought it was for weak people and frauds, you know. And I have to say this, you know, I've been around in CA 2 decades now. There's a lot of frauds everywhere in the world. There's a lot of bad apples everywhere in the world. And I was really, really fortunate that I came into 12-step recovery where you didn't, like, put your sponsor on some sort of pedestal, like there was some sort of spiritual giant or God. It was very much about a network of people around you, and that I was advised by really much wiser people that have been around longer than me to get a network of friends to be accountable to, and don't put your sponsor's just a human being that suffers from the same illness as you, you know, and be prepared to let go of people, you know, if they're not going to go to any lengths. And for me, once I had that gift of desperation and I'd been introduced to the 12 steps and I'd committed to do it for 6 months and do the steps, and then if it didn't work, I was going to go and use. Once I'd made that commitment and I got a home group and I got a sponsor, I was sort of took it really, really seriously, like annoyingly seriously. Like, I was not in any way preachy, but it was like, I did a lot of robot recovery. And if you weren't going to do, you know, I had 2 kids by this time. When I got clean, I was just like, at 6 weeks clean, I found out that I was 5 months pregnant. And so I think I must have been, whatever it was, 4 or 5 months clean, 6 months clean, max, when I had my son. And it was just like suddenly waking up and being a mum to 2 kids because I got my daughter back. And I committed to it 100%, and I took it really, really seriously. I thought it was my last hope, and it was my last hope. And I didn't suffer any falls. I just wanted to get on with the steps. I did everything that I was told. And there was a part of me that thought it wouldn't work, but I thought if I do it all 100%, and then it doesn't work, then I can go back to the life. It was really, really painful for me to stop grafting, stop selling drugs, and let go of that lifestyle, because I'd never had a job before I come into recovery. I was 28 years old. I didn't really have to go to school or any of the sort of socially normal stuff, so I had no proper education or anything like that. The biggest thing for me, once I was relieved, that first 6 months clean and sober, I was relieved to not be in a crack house. There was no serenity. It was just a relief to not be grafting and on the streets and in this little 1 mile radius prison of the front line in Bristol, which is a fucking dark place to live. So it was relief that I felt. There was no like happy, joyous and free for me for quite a long time. I had to find somewhere to live, look after 2 kids. Me and my husband had separated. I got tricked into getting a secretary commitment at a women's meeting. I still fucking hated women a lot. I thought they was all fucking hysterical. And because I've been brought up by a lot of women that hung out with men to take drugs, and I regarded myself as a bit of a geezer. I looked like a bloke. I was just really quite frosty with people. And I was told to go to this women's meeting to get a sponsor. So I went there. And I did find it quite intolerable. And I did a lot of that stuff through gritted teeth. And the whole God thing I really, really struggled with for a long time. But the advice I was given held me in such good stead. It's my sponsor, my first sponsor, was a born-again Christian, but she never, ever once told me what God's to believe in. And I didn't know that she believed in Jesus until I went and read my step 5 to her at her house. And I did a prayer, like the step three prayer. For the first time in my entire life, I prayed. And she goes, oh, we're going to do this prayer. And we got on our knees. She was so gentle. And we did the step three prayer. And I was like, fucking hell, it's the Jesus army. I knew it. But she, you know, she wasn't evangelizing. She was just like, let's just do this. And it was a really beautiful way to lead into that, reading that step five, you know. She never told me once what to believe. She told me to do a reading every day, which is basically fucking praying, isn't it? It's like reading scripture every day. It's just a trick. The whole thing's a cruel trick, people. So she told me to do a reading every morning. I didn't have to pray. So I did a reading every morning, which obviously aligns your thinking for the day. And she was like, oh, if you get a bit lost or angry in the day, just go back to your reading, your morning reading, and, you know, remember what that was. That's why I always say to my sponsees now, stop double and triple dropping your reading in the morning. Like, I had a sponsee once that was doing about 6 readings before she left the house, and I'd say to her, so what was in your reading this morning? And she'd be like, she can remember one of them, do you know what I mean? But it's just typical addict behaviour, isn't it? So I'd read my one reading, and Over time, I found my way. You know, I was brought up by hippies. My mum always did yoga. She had quite a spiritual phase in her life. So it does say in the book we might go back to, you know, the beliefs of maybe our parents or something like that. You know, if it wasn't too negative for us, we might find ourselves there. And that's where I found myself. But I always say to the people that I work with, you know, and I'm sorry if I go on about crack, I was a fucking crackhead, so you just have to change the analogy up. You know, I don't get excited if I talk about, oh, vodka or something. It just doesn't make me excited. But, you know, you never ever went to the crack house and said, oh, here's a tenth of white. Yeah, Sean, here's a tenth of white. I'd really like to sit here, Sean, and watch you smoke that crack. That would be really amazing. Thank you very much. Did you fucking do that? Did you fuck? So why are you going to come to 12-step recovery and sit there next to your sponsor and go, oh, yeah, that's really great that you've got God, Sean. I'm really glad you've got that experience. I'm just going to follow you around and fucking vicariously fucking think I'm going to get well off your experience. I mean, that is stupid, you know. And, you know, talking like you have got exactly the same recovery as your sponsor or your friends, or a relationship takes a long... It took me a long time to feel any connection with the God that I've got in my life, you know. And some days I feel very little. I just go through the motions. But if something isn't working for me for a while, if I have months where I'm really, really... It's quite dry and I'm not really feeling connected with God, I'll go and try something else. You know, I have a journey. When I was first took through the steps, I was told step 11 is a journey. Go on a journey, keep trying things, you know, get a connection. You'll have a really good connection for a while and then dig a little bit deeper and dig a bit deeper. And that's always worked so well for me, you know. And all of the steps is really about relationships, isn't it? You know, you've heard the speakers today. Step 10, you get the relationship right with yourself. I love to do a written step 10. Because I'm so good at lying to myself and to others. And if I write it on paper, it's just clear. You know, it's very hard to write a load of bullshit every day. And I do this reflective writing and journaling and stuff like this. And I love it. It leads me into my prayer. Once I've got my fear and any stuff out of the way, then I'll go into my quiet time. And it works really well for me. So that's step 10, a relationship with myself. Step 11, relationship with God. Step 12. Relationship with others. So for me, it is a daily thing. You know, I do enjoy the writing. It's just a discipline. It's just like anything. You know, if you smoke, you're used to smoking. That's your habit. And if you write, you just get used to writing. It isn't really a big deal. People make a big old song and dance about writing, don't they? But it's not a massive chore. It's not as difficult as trying to find a vein after you've fucked up every single vein in your body. You know, I could make a fucking crack pipe in the dark, mate, you know, and then you've got people pissing and moaning about having to do a bit of writing every day. It's like, Jesus, fucking hell, I don't know what you're using was like, but writing on a bit of paper is hardly that much of a chore. So, you know, that writing and getting honest with myself and getting clear, you know, does allow me to be a bit open to whatever it is that I need to get through each day. And it's got me through so much. I have to say, building that relationship with the God of my understanding, you know, it's got me through the death of my real dad died just in January. My mum died, my aunt died the year before, and she sort of brought me up on the hippie commune. She's the soberest, most beautiful woman that was in my life ever, that taught me so much. My mum died the year before that. She fell down the stairs drunk. And like my stepdad died when I was about 7 years, clean and sober. The guy that come and got me from the crack house, and he was like, I idolised the guy, do you know what I mean? He was the guy that could smoke crack like a gentleman. And, you know, I'm one of seven kids, and I've gone from being a fucking dictator, a real hard piece of work, really, really hard-nosed. I really looked after my little brothers and sisters, but at the same time, I really did think that I had all the answers for everything until I didn't. And then I just ran away and sat in a crack house and smoked, you know. And now I get to be the best sister. I've got my 18-year-old nephew living with me. My sister's moved back to India, where a lot of my other aunts and uncles live, with her two younger kids. My son's at uni. He's 20 next month. He's never even seen me smoke a cigarette. My daughter's 25. She's travelled all the way around the world. My daughter can remember the police kicking the door in on the regs when we were living in St. Paul's. And my earliest memory is of the police kicking the door in and taking my dad away. And I always said I'd never do that to my kids. I'd never do that to my kids. The fucking irony of life will teach you, won't it? You know, and I used to just, as soon as the old Bill used to kick the door in, I would pick my daughter up, put her on my knee, and pretend I was like Mary Poppins reading her a book, and think, because I didn't turn it into a drama, I had somehow absolved myself of any guilt of the fact that, you know, because it wasn't the police just kicking the door in, it's people coming to rob you. It's like, one time my best mate was on psychosis, and he just walked in and unplugged the TV while she was watching Teletubbies and walked out. You know, it's like, that is the life that I gave to my daughter. And I tell you what, she's not one of us, but she does written inventory. She does a gratitude list. She's a proper little yogi. She can be a bit of a wildling, but she can, so she drink. She can have a couple of lines of Coke if she wants. I mean, how beautiful is that? It's just amazing, isn't it? And do you know what? I have no envy for that now. You know, it's like, I'd have been so bitter and twisted about that stuff before. But who would have thought it, eh? And, you know, and I managed to forgive all my family. I'll finish on this. And my real dad is a difficult character. He was a heroin addict, and he was very abusive. He used to beat my mum up and all that sort of thing. And it's so funny because, well, you probably think that this is weird that I'm smiling, but just before Christmas, he found out he had liver cancer. Kel surprise, after years of injecting heroin. He was bright yellow, and he loved my brother, my real brother, but he didn't really care very much about me. He didn't know what to make of me. And the day before he died, he'd hoarded all of his mother's money. So he had got hundreds of thousands of pounds in a house. And he went, your brother's a bit of a fucktard, so I'm going to leave all the money to him because you've done all right for yourself. And I was like, all right, Dad, if that's what you want. That's not me. That is not me. That is not who I am. I would have made it my fucking business to get a hold of that money. You know? Beth doesn't do that stuff, and she doesn't let go of shit like that. Everything that I've got, I've earned myself. It's mine by right of consciousness. I made a decision not to sell drugs when I come into recovery, and I've grafted, so no one can fucking take it away from me. The only person that can mug me off for my achievements is me if I put down this program. And the things that are priceless to me now are the things that I desperately, desperately wanted when I first got clean, and those are the relationships that I've got in my life and the respect that my family have got for me and that I can be there for people. And that I can even put up with people crying now, because that used to make me really uncomfortable. And I can even cry now sometimes as well. So I am healing very, very slowly. I'm a bit of a slow burner. I've rambled on a bit, but I just wanted to that's my experience. You know, there's no spiritual giants here. I'm not going to come up and give the whole fucking I've got it going on thing, because, you know, I still suffer from a lot of the human condition that the rest of the planet do, despite the fact that I've got the 12 steps and I've got some good sobriety. So thank you very much for listening to me rattle on, and it's been great.